Here we are once again on side two of the January 1994 edition of Computer Talk, and we now hear from a contributor who is becoming quite well known on our magazines now. So over to Lionel Anwell.
Hello everybody. I've been invited to do a small piece on how I became involved in computing. Now, this was done about 4 years ago, I think, on the Whistler, and some of our readers in the computer talk may also take the Whistler, so if what I have to say is familiar, they must excuse me. I know that many of the people who take computer talk do not take the Whistler, so I'll do the best I can. This, of course, is light-hearted. It's nothing serious, nothing that you need worry about. In the first instance, I can't quite remember how on earth it was that I got on to Paul Hawes, who is a travelling expert for the Foundation for the Communication for the Disabled in Woking, although, of course, he works from his home mainly. In Worcester, or at least in Worcestershire, anyway. But in touch with him I did get, and he called at our house one afternoon. I think, I'm not sure whether it was 1984 or 1985, but in any case he came along and said that he wanted to introduce me to a little laptop. It was an NEC 8201. Got it out, put it on the table with a synthesizer attached to it, started showing me the keyboard and so on, and then I said, oh, that's, I'll have a bash, see how I get on with it. So he switched it on, and of course, having been employed in government service for some 27 years as a shorthand stroke audio typist, the keyboard gave me a flying start, so I sat and typed out one or two things, and so he said, all right, so I'll leave it with you. But then when he told me it was, I've forgotten now, somewhere between £600 and £700, I said, well, it's not on, because in those days, of course, we had just come down from Newcastle, and changing houses and having alterations done to the house we're in at the moment and all sorts of things meant that we were strapped for cash. But he says, no problem. He says, we aim to help people in circumstances like that. In those days, they used to help out by sending letters to people. And, of course, they got in touch with Jane and Brian Payne, who organized fundraising. I wrote to the RNIB and asked whether they would support me, and they did. I was backed up by my social worker, who is now a computer man himself, although on a Eureka, not one of ours. Anyway, it was all settled, and eventually the machine was paid for. And after about 2 months, when I'd been doing files and saving them and deleting them and altering them and all the rest of it, I rang Paul and I said, well, what do I do now? I know how to use the machine. I know all its tricks. What happens now? He said, yes, well, you need a printer. So he got in touch with the people at Woking, and that was arranged too. And my Citizen 120D duly arrived and was fixed up. And that little machine served us well, I think, for about, probably about 3 years. I think it was 1988 when we got the Amstrad, which I now have. It did yeoman service. It did things like programs for the club that I'm in, and a hefty translation from French to English for a young student that Jessie undertook, about 60 pages worth. She liked the machine because there was no setting up to do. She just switched it on and off she went. In our case, of course, if we wanted speech, you tapped the space bar 3 times and then pressed return, and it says mimic installed. It was a neat little job and very, very light. You could put it in its case and take it off with you if you were going anywhere. And, of course, could be battery driven. It had a power pack in the top right-hand side. I don't know whether anybody knows the machine at all, but anyway, that's what set me off. And then I discovered that I wanted to do other things, more complicated things, and I got in touch with the people at Woking and said, how about it? And they offered me an Amstrad 1640 in exchange for the little NEC, which of course I had to send back to them. And so that's how I got landed. I must say that computing has, as my wife puts it, has kept me young, because I'm always trying something or other. I have, of course, through that article to the Whistler, I must say that I gathered round me some very excellent friends, which fortunately I still have, and can call on them when I wish, by phone or by letter or by disc. And so that has worked out very well. Now, if I can just finish off with one or two little points. I was asked to do a survey on Galaxy Pro Lite, but I'm having a little difficulty at the moment because I haven't yet been able to set it up so that it will print, but no doubt this will eventually be ironed out, and when it is, then I shall do the review as promised. All these word processors, I think, have their advantages and disadvantages. To my mind, the menu-driven type, like the Galaxy Pro Lite and Galaxy Glite and the Galaxy itself, to my mind, the idea that you have to set up a file name before you type anything, then you have to save it, and then you have to call it back in order to print it when you want it, seems to me a slight disadvantage. It has other advantages. For example, you have all the different typeface changes on the ProLite. You get up to 14 changes if you want them. There's 6 on the keyboard itself and another 8 on the function keys, but I better not go into that now, because if I'm going to review it, then we can do it when I'm fixed up. Now, that compared with one WordPerfect Junior, which is the one that I use at the moment because I can print with that, WordPerfect Junior has the advantage that you can sit down at the machine if you want to write out a note to the milkman or pay a bill or something that you don't want to keep a copy, you don't have no interest in it once it's done. You write what you want, your address, the body of the letter, and the subscription, and then you print it. No file name, nothing. And then when you've finished with it, you press the function key 7, and it says save text Y or N, and you press N because you don't want to save it, and then it says exit WordPerfect, and it, you press Y, and off you go, then you're back to DOS. There's another little one. When I first got the Amstrad 1640, I was running on something called the HAL editor, which has many disadvantages, one of which is that you can't control the margin stops particularly well. But what I have found is that if I get a disk from someone and I want to make notes from it, using the DOS method, the type and the file name, it runs right through, and unless you're quick in the uptake, you don't manage to make notes from that. So what I do, if I want to take anything down in detail, is to load the HAL editor. Then, of course, you've got the thing like the, you press the letter E, and it says file to edit, wherever the disk happens to be that you've received. You raise the file from there, and you press the enter key, and then it you can read it line by line, or word by word if you want to. And I find this very useful. And also, of course, the fact that there are no margins set means that it doesn't matter whether people have done it on a machine that has 50 degrees to the line, or 60, or 70, 75, or whatever it is. It will read them up to, of course, a maximum of 80. So I find that very useful. I'm just wondering if other people keep things like that too. So I think that I have perhaps bent your ears long enough to all my friends in and around computer talk. This is Lionel Anwell wishing you all the best. And in case there are any new readers who might want to know, might want to get in touch, the name is L.W. Anwell, and the address 6060 Lansdowne, Lansdowne Road, Canterbury, Kent, CT13JP. A telephone, the code is 0227 and the number 765713. So goodbye for now.
And goodbye to Lionel there, and thanks for that little article there. And we also look forward to the promised article later on in time when eventually you get set up with the ProLite. Well, on this tape we'd already had one article regarding the speech system HAL, but we're now going to have another article, or should I say half an article, as it is quite a long one, regarding another speech system. So here is our old friend Albert Yost to tell you all about it.
There's been a lot of interest in alternative to HAL for speech and screen reading purposes. Those of you who've been involved in the Manchester Guardian project to dispense next day's newspaper via a modem are familiar with the Beacon speech program, but Some of us have been trying all the different ones we can get our hands on and evaluating them. And by far the most popular seems to be Vocal Eyes. That's VocalEyes, Eyes. And we've mentioned it before on this magazine. And I get quite a few inquiries from people wanting help with the setting up and the using of Vocal Eyes. But it's a very, very versatile program and very efficient, and it's no wonder it's becoming so popular. A little bit expensive, not sure of the exact current price, but it's certainly three figures, well into the three figure region. To get the best out of any program, whether it's a word processor or a spreadsheet, a database or what it is, you have to put some time in setting it up. And this applies, of course, to Vocal Eyes. It applies to HAL equally, except that when you buy HAL, if you buy it from Dolphin, of course they will, or they say they will, set it up to your requirements. We won't go into that, but Vocal Eyes, of course, comes with some defaults already set, which you can change, but a lot of things which are not set, and it's left to you to set them in the way you want them, to customize it. And I thought this time we'd look at one of the menus which helps you to do this, to customize it. First of all, for the record, to enter the menu system, you press Control and F10, function key 10, and that takes you to the first of 8 menus. You can cursor up and down through the various menus, the list of menus, and the first one that comes up when you enter the menu system is Screen, which allows you to set the way the Vocalize handles what appears on the screen in a general way. The second one down, if you cursor down, is Keyboard, which obviously allows you to set the way Vocalize responds to commands from the keyboard, again in a fairly general sort of way. Now the third menu is called Hot Keys, and Hot Keys are keystrokes or key combinations which will perform certain functions for you, certain commands and so on. And a lot of these are undefined to start with. One or two, particularly at the beginning of the list of options in that menu, are defined, but you can change them. Having cursored down to the Hot Keys menu, you press Enter or Return to initialize it, and that then brings up a list of options which are in that menu. And again, the cursor keys are very easy to use. They will speak directly as you cursor down or up to them to tell you what they are. And I thought we'd look at this menu because it's the longest. It's got 61 options in it, which enable you to customize the setup. I thought we'd go through that menu briefly today, so that if you are using Vocalize, or if you're contemplating the possibility of using it, you can use this list, if you wish, for reference when you're actually customizing it. So, when you press Enter to initialize the Hot Keys menu, the first option will be spoken, and it gives each option a number. And it will say 1, prior char, which means previous character. And it is defined already as Control and B, B for Bravo. So if you press Control B when you have something on the screen, it will speak the character to the left of the cursor, the previous character. And it's already defined as Control B. but you can change that if you wish to be something else, and that applies to all of these options. If it gives you a default setting, you can change it. The next one, when you cursor down, it will say to char, which means to current character, and that's the one under the cursor, and it's set already to control C. Then cursor down and it will say 3 next char, which obviously means the character to the right of the cursor, and that's predefined as control D. So you've got control B, C and D for previous character, current character and next character, character to the right. The next one down is 4 prior word, which means the word to the left of the cursor, and that is control V, V for Victor. Number 5, cursoring down again, is word or current word, and that's predefined for you as control W, and again of course you can change it. Cursor down, and number 6 is next word, which is again predefined as control Y. Number 7 is prior line, that's the previous line, the line above the cursor, and that is predefined as control K. Number 8, line, obviously the line that the cursor's on, is control L. So if you do control L, it will speak the line that the cursor's on. Number 9, next line, obviously the line below the cursor, is control M, M for Montreal. Number 10 is prior sent, S-E-N-T. That means the sentence prior to the one that the cursor is currently in, and the command is control R. Number 11, sent, that's obviously the sentence which the cursor is currently in, and that is control S, S for Santiago. Number 12, next sent, and that is control T, T for Tokyo. That's predefined. Number 13, prior para. Now that is the previous paragraph. If you issue that command, which is control O, if you issue that, it will speak the whole of the paragraph prior to the one that the cursor is on. Number 14, para. That's the, it means if you issue the command, which is control P, P for Peter, it will speak the current paragraph that the cursor is in. Number 15, next para, control Q. Those are predefined. Number 16, top cursor, undefined. Now, that is the first of the undefined ones. And top cursor means that if you define a key with this option to do so, it, when you press it, it will speak the what you would hear if you pressed the up cursor, to save you using the cursor keys. And you can define that to be whatever you like. I'll tell you at the end of this piece how to define these options. That's number 16, top cursor, and it's currently undefined. Number 17, cursor bot, B-O-T, also undefined, and that you can define. It means that if you define a key or key stroke or key combination, when you enter that key or key combination, it will speak what you would hear if you cursored down, but it won't move the cursor down. And same goes for option 17, cursor top cursor. That will speak what you would hear if you curse it up, but it won't move the cursor up. Number 18, left cursor, undefined. Again, if you define a key for that and then press that key when you've got something on the screen, it will speak the character to the left of the cursor. Number 19, cursor right. And again, if you define a key for that, it will speak what you would hear if you pressed the right cursor key. Now, number 20, window 0. And that is predefined as Alt 0. That's the number 0. Not F0, the number 0. That is option number 20, and it will say window 0, Alt 0. We'll leave the question of windows for now and deal with it another time. You can change that, of course. Instead of Alt 0 giving you the contents of window 0, you can define it to be a different keystroke. The same applies to all the remaining window definitions, which are options 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, and finally 29, option 29, window 9, which is Alt 9, but again you can redefine it. Those are predefined for you. Number 30, read box, undefined. Now that is not defined, but you can define it so that a given keystroke or combination will read directly the contents of any box that appears on the screen. And if you've used application programs very much, you'll know that things like databases or games or anything of that sort will often produce a box or a little area of the screen in a different colour, usually with a border around it forming a box. And option 30 allows you to define a keystroke which will, when you press it, speak the contents of any box that's on the screen. If there isn't a box on the screen, it just won't speak.
Well, that was part of an article which Albert has done for us regarding the menus in Vocalize, and we shall have the second part of that on the April issue of Computer Talk. However, as promised earlier, we shall carry on with some more items from the Age and Appliances exhibition in Edinburgh.
What tinkling history that's going here then?
It's called the Teal Beta X3.
I see. And it's printing a line at a time.
It's doing one complete line of two dots. In other words, each push, it's doing dots 1 and 4, but the whole line of them. Then it's doing the middle two, then the bottom two.
Yes. I see. Paper,
yes.
Just computer paper.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
He's
got here, if you're careful, he's got, there's your tractor.
Yes.
Under there, right?
Yes. Yes.
Now, you've got that width possible.
Yes.
Right. Well, actually, the width you've got is actually up to there.
Yes.
Because the maximum is 44 characters to the line that you can do on this one.
I see. Mm. And did he say it can print double-sided as well?
No, this one can't.
Oh, I see.
This one is a single-sided braille printer.
Yes.
Teal do a double-sided one, which is a production model.
Yes.
Because you are talking about it doing 800 pages an hour.
Oh.
Double-sided.
Yes.
And is costing £36,000.
Oh, gosh, yes, no wonder.
And stands taller than you and I.
Yes. Mm. So, where the controls on this picture?
The only controls you've got are that one.
Oh, I see, yes. Ah, yes. Got about 7 controls, one being on off, no doubt.
No, no, the little switch is on offline.
Oh, I see. All right.
And then you've got line feed and form feed at the top.
Yes.
You've then got top of form, which is the next, which is on the left there.
Yes.
The next one is go.
Yes.
And the bottom two are yes and no. Now, the reason for the yes and no is the fact that you do the setting up in the memory of the printer.
Yes, I see.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So, what you do is you hold down your form feed as you switch on.
Yes.
And it goes into a parameter mode.
Right.
It will ask you questions. In other words, it brails a question, right?
I see.
It then shoots the paper backwards.
Yes.
So your question comes between those two bars.
Oh, I see.
You read the question and answer yes or no.
Oh, I see.
And the last question is, do you want to save the parameters? So you answer yes to it.
Oh, I see.
So that's what that's for.
So the questions are printed on the paper you've got in, are they?
That's it, yes. Yeah.
I see.
When you're setting it up in the beginning, you know.
Oh, right, I see.
And your go button is that this other bar here, that's your paper out sensor.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it detects the paper has gone.
Yes.
So all you then do is load more paper in.
Yes.
Because it automatically stops embossing.
Yes.
At the end of the page that's gone through.
Yes.
You then reload the paper and press go, and it carries on printing.
I see, right. Yeah. It's certainly a big printer, this.
This is a big one, yeah. It's about 3 foot left to right, 2 foot from front to back.
Yes.
Stands about 6 inches high.
Yes.
And I do know it weighs 85 pounds.
Oh, you'd have to bring in here then, wouldn't you?
Yes. Mm. Yes.
And what it cost?
£7,500.
Oh, I'm not surprised, yes.
But there is, for example, one upstairs here in the Royal Blind School that we estimate is 7 years old and is still going strong.
Gosh, well that's good.
We've got them in NatWest Bank in London, two of them, doing statements.
Oh.
And they're working roughly 6 hours a day each.
Oh, God.
And they've been there for 6 years.
Mm.
We've had to rebuild the mechanical parts once, which was about a year ago.
Mm.
And I reckon they've got another 5 years before we've got to rebuild again.
Oh, gosh.
And we just rebuild it, you see.
Mm.
Because the electronics don't seem to go wrong. It's only the moving parts.
Yes, oh, that's right, the mechanical part, yes.
This is made by the same company as make the little port of teal down the bottom end there.
Yes.
Now, you're interested in the Everest double-sided.
Yes, it operates vertically, same as the one you have at home. I think the paper goes in at the top and comes down.
Yes, it does rather look like that. And it's got row of letters and bits and pieces, it must be for all its buttons and things like that.
Let's read that. The user is guided through all operations by digitised speech, optionally. It's about to start.
Is it? Why?
You don't send a paper. You send it fast.
Yes.
It sorts out pages. And why does it attack? Because
you are wrong. The Everest D 100 characters per second braille printer with integral single sheet feeder, 50 characters per second single sided. Oh, that does make sense.
Mm.
It'll go twice as fast when it's doing double sided, I suppose.
And it's very, very good. And it doesn't have to be computer taped paper either.
No, it can be loaded between 100 and 150 sheets of Braille paper. But it can use any rate of paper, I think. Up to 42 cells wide. Weighs 11 kilograms. It takes up 22 by 16 inches of desk space, 563 by 400 millimeters.
And it seems to go feed in the top and come out of bottom, but it's got feet to stand on, so it
yes.
just lie and the paper just come out and stand there.
It handles breaking up the text into pages itself, formatting for page length, so it doesn't print across the perforations.
Oh, that's good.
But you can send it formatted text from a computer if you wish, pre-formatted text. It has a 400,000 character buffer, allowing the user to send large documents to it, releasing the computer for other work while still printing. You can tell it to print up to 999 copies if you wish, again releasing the computer for other work. The cost, which is £3,400, includes a 2-year or 50,000 sheet back-to-base warranty.
That's a useful thing if it can detect page breaks or perforated lines, as it were.
Yes, it doesn't say on the leaflet how it does that, whether you have to tell it what the length is, or whether it works that out itself, but either way it shouldn't be too difficult.
Yeah,
paper, cut paper width 150 to 297 millimetres, 6 to 12 inches, length 150 to 350 millimetres, 6 to 14 inches, paper weight 90 to 180 grams per square metre.
Oh, that's interesting.
A new and user-friendly interface based on an ergonomically designed front panel marks in Braille and ink print with logical command sequences. The user is optionally guided through all operations by digitized speech.
Certainly on that panel on the front it had Braille symbols and numbers and so forth.
Yes. Most paper qualities can be used from copy to heavy Braille paper. Well, that's the 90 to 180 GSM. As you heard, it's quite noisy. Interface Centronics Parallel Serial Interface RS232C.
This is the Ross
Talking Alarm
Clock.
$13.99.
And it's about how 4 inches each way.
4 inches square.
And an inch thick. Has a big thing in the middle, shaped like a little bell with a speaker, and you press it and it says.
It's 1:30 p.m.
It says that when it is 1:30 p.m, of course.
Yes.
It's a normal alarm clock with LCD display. For normal, appears to run on AAA batteries. They have the
and the alarm we haven't got at the moment.
The alarm we haven't got indeed. I will see if I can make it. Alarm set. Power.
And you set it by counting then?
Yes.
Now,
how? I don't know if there's any easy way to tell what the alarm is set to. For the visually handicapped, mm-hmm. But that actually speaks what it's set to, doesn't it?
It's 1:32 p.m.
So if I set the alarm.
It's 1:33 p.m.
And then I put it back on the time.
It's 1:32 p.m.
The alarm will go off shortly. I had it turned off, sorry.
That one near is for like 50.
An hourly chime, is it? Yes, there's an hourly chime, also switchable. So we've just got to wait. Is that all? Oh, time to wake up, I see.
It's 1:33 p.m.
And presumably you'd stop. You'd stop it by pressing the button. Right.
Time to wake up.
Yeah,
right.
Well, that's different.
Didn't
make much noise though.
No, and there is no volume control. Well, if it's going to run on small batteries to be portable, I presume they can't make it too loud.
Well, it wouldn't wake me up.
Talking calendar watch, 12:75.
Yes. It's pretty quiet, really.
Well, as you'd normally hold it to your ear, I imagine.
How do you get the time on it?
Oh, of a button. Yes.
Right. And does that have an alarm as well?
I don't quiet, think I so. No alarm.
Oh,
just
right.
Date and time.
All right. So that'd be useful for someone who wants it.
A smaller one, the talking keychain alarm clock, 6:75.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a sort of thing for putting on a keyring.
It is, yeah. It's just like a keyring thing. Like the type you used to have horse on and things like that. That has an alarm as well, did you say?
It claims to, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's very quiet, I think.
I would imagine so. It must run on very small batteries.
Obviously, sight and sound.
Reading edge, a Kurzweil reader. Pad on top for glass for putting the material to be read. And the control panel down here that you'd have thought that they would have labelled in Braille, but they haven't.
Yes, it's only a small control pad, about 5 inches wide, 4 inches from back to front.
With buttons
and
for last word. Next word, last column, next column, last sentence, next sentence, last page, next page. Spell, punctuation on or off, columns, mark text, erase text and select input. Start, stop scanning, stop, continue reading, and a help button.
Yes. So that is attached by one of those telephone cords to it. And it's a standalone machine, would you say?
Oh, definitely, yes.
And how big would you say it is?
7.5 inches high, 19.5 inches wide, 15.5 inches deep.
Yes.
24 pounds weight, that is 60 watts. Runs off the mains. It can be used with headphones, which suggests it has a synthesizer. Volume and speaking knobs. The volume and speaking knobs have different textures and rotation patterns, so users can easily differentiate between them.
Yes, because the knobs are long knobs, about half inch long, with a dot on one end. And they move circularly around.
Columns as well.
Welcome to the Reading Edge, version 2.0. DeckTalk version 4.0. This startup message describes the three keys on the bottom row of the keypad. These are the primary keys for using the Reading Edge. The bottom left key starts or stops scanning. The bottom middle key starts or stops speaking. The bottom right key is the help key. For information on any key, first press the help key. Then, press and hold down the key you want described. To start scanning, place a page face down on the scanner glass and press the bottom left key. To repeat the startup message, press the help key, the bottom right key on the keypad.
Just put a book on the scanner. Can you press the bottom column, just let me...
Variable one column page scanning.
No, can you press the bottom left-hand key, please?
Yeah.
That started its scanning.
Right. Does it scan anyway?
Always scans 7 seconds. It'll scan whether it's got automatic page orientation, so you can put something on there upside down anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So that's scanned.
So it'll say if it's upside down, then you have to turn it over.
Period
5, period 7, physiotherapy, RNIB North London School of Physiotherapy is now closed for admissions. All visually impaired people wishing to pursue a career physiotherapy are advised in the FFFSP instance to contact the manager, the RNIB Physiotherapy Upon Service. 32 universities in the UK offer BSc degree courses in physiotherapy, and RNIB is prepared to support visually impaired students in all of them. It has a physiotherapy resource center based at the University of Not Safe Punctuation.
Still reading.
What are these keys here?
That tells the machine whether you're reading columns or if you want it to speak punctuation along with text.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Telling it whether you're scanning text or you want to receive text from a computer.
Yes. So is this machine the same family as the Kurzweil?
This is the Reading Edge, a Kurzweil reader. It's been out since January of this year. It's replaced the Kurzweil personal reader.
Right, so what's special about it as opposed to the last one?
Okay, it's been improved in its recognition and speed by 22%. It's an all-in-one unit. Gives you a reading speed of 40 words a minute going up in stages to a maximum of 550 words a minute. Gives you a Braille editing keypad. An editing keypad, for if you don't know Braille, it allows you to plug a remote disk drive into it if you wanted one of those.
DOS compatible?
Yes, you've got, let me show you. This is an easier way.
Setup keypad. Braille editing keep communication keypad. Computer compatibility. IBM compatible DOS character encoding. MS Windows and ISO character encoding. Mac compatible character encoding. 7-bit ISO encoding. IBM compatible DOS character encoding.
You can change the settings.
Baud rate. Parity. Stop bit. Handshake. Serial output. Key nod and use.
These are
key nod and use.
Spare for later editions.
Disk management reading keypad.
Okay.
What's
it's got a serial port at the back of it.
Yeah. So you can dump to computer or you can take off the computer.
Yep, no problem at all.
It works both ways.
Yes.
So the Braille reading keypad, what's...
You can edit pronunciation, like Jesus, Jesus, Chris, Christ, Margaret, Margaret.
Oh, I see.
More of a T added to it.
So it's like a...
Exception
dictionary.
Yeah. You can, if let's say someone sent you a letter and when they signed the letter they ruined the sincerely word, then you can go back and, you know, correct that. That's good.
So what's the price of this machine if people are interested?
£4,495.
I see, right. Have you sold many yet?
You're looking at 60 so far since January.
What's it like on typefaces?
And you've got to try it, really.
I mean, most how about 9-pin.matrix draft? That kills most of them.
Best to try. I know that we just had the new upgrades. I'm not too sure how it will be. But this is an example of the editing keypad for the same keypad, but the keys changed.
Right, the four functions.
Disk management.
Four different functions for the keypad, yes.
Yeah.
I saw it in the leaflet. A bit puzzled when you were talking about Braille editing. This is so you could read a document, then edit it, and then save it to a computer.
That's correct, yeah.
Right.
You can edit in, like with pronunciation, you can edit pronunciation, still have the words spelled out, and it'll still spell it correctly.
Right, right.
Hope some of you enjoyed those little tidbits from the Edinburgh exhibition, and more from there next time, hopefully. We also hope to bring new articles on DOS 6, compression and double spacing. Trust you have enjoyed the first edition of Computer Talk for 1994. If you would like to contact us, we are Julia and Frank Cosgrove at number 8 Wandsworth Road, Heaton, Newcastle upon Tyne, NE65AD. Telephone number 0912656345. So until we speak to